What up? Welcome to another episode of 94 Feet with Coach JT. Thank you for listening in. Please leave a like or a comment below as I continue to grow and expand this podcast journey. Today, I got a dope guest for you guys today. My guest today is from Sonora, Mexico. However, she grew up in San Diego, California. Also earned her bachelor's degree from San Diego State University, as well as a master's from National University. Currently, she is working on her doctoral degree. She has a past coaching history, stops at Westcliff University here in California, as well as Bethesda University. She is now currently located on the East Coast in Baltimore. Coach Patty Medina, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you taking the time out your day to give me. I know we're on different time schedules, so I definitely know it is time conservation going on right now. So as we know, again, being a coach, you and myself, we're going to jump right into this 94 feet thing. Let's go back to the origin of Sonora, Mexico, in sports in general. Is that something that's always been? How did that get started with you as far as sports or basketball?
Well, where I'm from in Mexico, our dominant sport is actually baseball. So baseball for men, volleyball for women. So women weren't allowed to play basketball until probably in the late 90s. but soccer, obviously, everyone thinks Mexico is soccer players. So for me, it was soccer. I grew up playing soccer. I actually didn't play basketball until sixth grade. During one of my PE classes in sixth grade, a friend was like, "Hey, you should come out for the basketball team." I didn't know what it was. And they're like, "Oh, it's just like soccer, but without using your hands, with using your hands." And so I was like, "Okay, that makes sense." Ended up playing, fell in love with it. So I played sixth grade. Then I didn't play in middle school because I wasn't aware of like AU teams, anything like that. Like, you know, I'm a kid from Mexico. Like, I had just came from Mexico, was learning Spanish, learning English, learning how to, you know, assimilate into the American culture. And so I ended up not playing in middle school. And then finally in high school, tried out for, you know, the teams and played JV my freshman year, and then played varsity sophomore, junior, senior year. And again, I played under a coach that didn't really tell us the information that we needed to know at the time, you know, and I didn't know that I was being, you know, sold short in that sense until I became a coach. So, like, we didn't know about, you know, NAIA clearinghouse. We didn't know about NCAA. We didn't know about, you know, JUCOs. Like, we didn't know anything. We thought it was D1 or bust. And so there were so many athletes from my high school that didn't really go anywhere because we just weren't aware of the resources. And so I left San Diego. I actually went up to the Bay Area. I was at Dominican, and I was getting ready to start playing at Dominican, and I decided I want to get a job. I wanted to start adulting. And so I didn't even end up playing at Dominican, but I was a student there for, you know, a whole year. That's how I met Sam and Bola and everybody from Dominican, my DU fam. So it was just one of those things where, like, I never learned how to make my sport my priority in a sense. It was like just a hobby, something that we did. And so then, like most freshmen, you know, they raised tuition, didn't give me enough scholarships. So I ended up coming back to San Diego, and I was on a full Pell Grant. And so if I go to San Diego, like, I'm pocketing money instead of having to pay money out of pocket for schooling. And so I ended up doing my bachelor's at San Diego State, obviously not good enough to play at San Diego State. But I had my high school coach was like, "Hey, I have a middle school coaching position. Like, I need someone to come help." Started helping 17 years old, coaching 14, 15 year olds. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the leadership aspect. I fell in love with, like, teaching through being, you know, like, I'm growing into a woman as I'm teaching them how to grow into a woman. And I just fell in love with coaching. So I've been coaching since I was 17. I'm 35 now. I've been coaching for a while. I did the high school ranks. So I did it the grassroots way. I didn't have anyone, like, you know, help me skip spots. sorry, skip steps. It was literally like I did middle school, I did JV, I did the assistant varsity, and then I ended up getting one of my former high school players was like, hey coach, like my JUCO team needs practice players and scorekeepers. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I ended up volunteering. Next thing you know, I'm helping. I'm like a volunteer assistant coach. Next thing you know, I get a job offer to coach at the JUCO level, like officially. And so I ended up coaching at the junior college level for about 6 years as an assistant. So I was in the JUCO system for about another 6 years. And then, same thing. It's about the network and the relationships that you make. And I had a coach that would always tell me, like, you know, you grind, your work ethic, always complimented my work ethic and told me that if there was ever a position that he could help me get to become a head coach, that he would help me. And he sure did. So that's how I ended up at Bethesda. So I ended up at Bethesda as a head coach there. I was there for 2 years. It was a very difficult situation because they weren't fully accredited. We didn't have a gym. We hardly had any scholarships. I was driving like the 40-passenger bus, driving my team to and from games. We're having to squish people into hotels. So it was now in retrospect, I'm like, damn, they played me, you know, but it taught me a lot, you know, and it taught me a lot. And one thing, I have a friend that they mentored me during that time frame, and she was like, Teddy, you can turn water into wine. You know, because we were able to win games, we were able to compete. So I was there for 2 years, and my AD told me, like, hey, there is a possibility we might lose the accreditation altogether. You should get out while you can, you know. And so then he recommended me to the athletic director at Westcliff, who was going to start up their women's program. And so he was like, hey, you know, my coach, I think she can be a good candidate for you to start this program from scratch. You know, it'd be a great opportunity. So ended up taking a job at Westcliff, started the program from scratch. I was able to have 14 players my first season, literally from ground zero, 14 players, same thing, no gym. We weren't in a conference where you weren't even NAIA at the time, but I had 14 players. I had 3 D1 games, guaranteed games. So it was like, you know, it was a solid season for being our inaugural season. And then long story short, the AD that hired me got sick. New AD came in. Anytime a new AD or a new president comes in, there's always, you know, a change in staff, and they wanted to go a different direction. And so I ended up, you know, being let go. And I ended up in Texas as an assistant at Our Lady of the Lake University. So first time out of state, first time out of California, I go coach at a top 10 NAIA school program, learned so much, made a lot of connections. But then I realized, you know, my son, I have a 12-year-old son, and he's going into middle school, and it just really it dawned on me, like, hey, I need to do a better job of work-life balance, you know. And then COVID hit, and it's just a lot of things. So now I'm in actually an assistant athletic director, and so I'm making the transition from coaching to athletic admin, and I'm enjoying it. I get to be around sports still. I get to still impact student athletes. I still get to, you know, watch games. And so, yeah, that's pretty much my career in a nutshell in regards to coaching. And then obviously my nonprofit, which we'll get into later.
Yeah, definitely. Just a journey woman, I should say, right? So, and as we just passed up, you know, actually going into this Women's History Month, and just as far as, you know, women advancement in sports. And again, I mean, you're deep into the knowledge of it. I mean, I would just want to go back real quick to the JUCO opportunity. How tough, again, being from starting JUCO opportunity, getting assistant, I mean, sacrifices you had to make, like, what was the driving force during that time of your period of your life where you say, you know, okay, they just want an assistant and they want a scorekeeper. That everybody's not going to do, you know what I mean? Some people are like, no, I'm bigger than that. Or what kind of made you jump on the opportunity at that time?
I think it comes down to work ethic. You know, I'm the type of coach that's going to get on their knees and scrub gum off the court. You know, I'm the type of coach that's going to sweep the bleachers. You know, I'm the type of coach that will mop their own their own court. Like, you have some very entitled people that say, like you said, I'm too good for that, you know? And so for me, I don't think any task is too small for someone to do. So like, if there's a need for it in the sport, is if there's someone that needs to do clock, if there's someone that needs to be a practice player, if you need to sweep, if you need to wash uniforms, you know, for me, like, and I think all of that did not go unseen, you know, because people saw what I was doing as a volunteer. They're like, yo, she's here at 6 a.m. workouts without pay as a volunteer, you know, keeping score, whatever, you know, sweeping, whatever it was that we needed to, that needed to be done, setting up bleachers, setting up for games, anything that needed to be done, I was doing it for free. And so people were like, yo, if she's doing this for free, imagine, you know, like, she deserves to get paid. Like, she, her work ethic speaks for itself. And so I think a lot of times people are very entitled. They think that because they have certain accreditations or certain rapport or reputation or wins or whatever, they become too good to do certain things. And I'll never, I mean, I'm the type of person that, like, you know, treats the janitor, as cliche as it sounds, treats the janitor the same way you would a CEO, you know, because at the end of the day, like, you just never know. You never know. And that is what ended up happening with me. You know, I treat all my players like they're my daughters, you know, and I treat them like with respect. I always teach them that respect given is respect earned, even if it's an authoritative figure. You know, if someone comes at you sideways, they don't deserve your respect. Now, if they come in and they build rapport and they build confidence and whatever, then they deserve your respect. But that's how one of my players ended up coming back to me and offering me that position, like, literally vouched for me, told her coach about me as her high school coach. And literally from there, it was just, you know, it was door after door after door just being opened. And you know, like I said, you just got to, like Nipsey Hussle says, you know, when preparation meets opportunity. And like, for me, I did everything, even to this day, like, I tried to do everything as possible, because even right now, I'm an assistant AD. Someone might come in here and see everything I'm doing as an assistant. They might be like, yo, so-and-so needs an actual AD, like a, you know. Yep. And so you just really have to let your work ethic speak for itself. So,
speaking of the work ethic, if you could, where does pinpoint that? Where does that come from? Where does that originate from? Because I've seen some other business ventures prior to, and you've always, that's all you do, work at 100%, you know, if you put 110%. If you could pinpoint it, where does it come from?
I think it's really keeping into perspective your why. For me, my why started when I first came to the United States. So when I came to the United States, I'm 9 years old. I'm thrown into an all-English first grade class, and they were like, sink or swim. You learn English or you get held back, you know? And I ended up learning English literally within the 10 months of first grade. Was fluent English. Even to this day, people are like, oh, you don't have an accent, you know. And so it was one of those things where I was taught at an early age what pursuing the American dream consisted of, which it was either sink or swim, survival of the fittest, you know, you're the prey or the predator. Like, it was literally like what it came down to. And so that was my abrupt reality coming into the United States. And then seeing my dad, you know, both my parents have fourth grade education. Like, none of my family has college education. I'm the first in my family to have a bachelor's, first in my family to get a master's, and now I'll be the first in my family with a PhD. And so again, like, you know, Russell Westbrook says all the time, like, why not you. And so you have to keep that into perspective. And I think right now that's lacking. You know, a lot of student athletes, a lot of people are looking to outside sources for motivation, outside sources for reasons to have work ethic, when in reality it has to come in from the inside. You know, like, why are you motivated? Now I'm a single mom. That's another motivator. You know, it's like, so at the end of the day, like, when I feel like I don't want to do anything, I sit back and I'm like, okay, I have so many reasons to keep going. I have so many reasons to not give up. I have so many. And so you have to keep, you know, the main thing, and you have to keep those in the forefront because if you lose sight of why you're doing what you're doing, it'll be easy to get sidetracked, you know, especially in basketball, like, especially during COVID. Like, a lot of people were, their true colors came out during COVID because it started to show, like, who was really about that hoop life, you know, and getting workouts in, or not even working out, like training their mental and watching inspirational videos or whatever it was to better their game. And a lot of people gained 20, 30 pounds, you know, like just been sitting around, like their skill level. And again, there is a level of like, yeah, you have to take time to recuperate and really soak it all in. But at the same time, you can't just sulk in it, you know, and you have to really like dig yourself out of that hole. And yeah, I think for me, that's where the work ethic comes. You know, for anyone, you have to really keep into perspective why you're doing what you're doing, and remind yourself every day, like, why am I doing this? Why am I here? What am I getting out of it? And if you're not getting anything out of it, you know, and not in a sense of like money, but getting something out of it, as in like you feel purposeful, you know, you feel fulfilled. Yeah. And so that's my main thing. Like, if I don't care how much money I make, if I'm not fulfilled in the position that I'm in, I'm making changes.
It's different.
I'm making changes.
Yep. Definitely agree with you on that for sure. That inside fulfillment, or that humbleness, that joy doesn't come from the dollar all the time for the right people. Westcliff. You talk about your energy, the relationship with the girls. Had the pleasure of popping up one time at William Jessup. From the start of the game to the end of the game, the energy, the vibrancy, good play, bad play from you to your teammates. Doesn't matter if you had maybe 8 girls at the time right there, 9.
Yeah.
How do you infect that type of feeling with them, though? Because, again, they were up. They were still playing hard, giving their all. I mean, on the ground, loose ball. But then for me, again, I see similarities because you're on the sideline going right with them, no matter what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how do you instill that type of passion or energy into your team and your players?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my motto, the highest human act is to inspire. And so my thing is, we can all talk a great talk. We can all like, just, man, I can paint you a pretty picture, but if at the end of the day, my walk isn't matching my talk, you lose respect from players, coaches, anyone. Right. And so my thing was that the same effort that they gave on the court, I gave that effort off the court. I gave that effort at practice. I gave that effort, you know, whether if it was coming out of the pocket, like they gave us $5 meal budget, and I'm paying, you know, extra $10 per person out of my own pocket to make sure that my 8 players get well fed, because you're going to play 40 minutes and we only have 3 subs, you know? And so they would see things that, like, the intangibles. They would see the things that the sacrifices I would make as a mother, you know. They would see all those sacrifices. And so it really became of, like, not that they owed me anything, but it became one of those situations where, man, Coach P will run through a wall for us. You know what? The least we could do is play hard. The least we could do is give energy. And that's my main thing with coaching. I will never, ever again, I did it 1 year, I will never, ever again coach effort. I will never, ever again coach energy. Like, either you match the energy, or you find it in yourself to build that energy, or it's just not in you, you know? And effort, same thing. Like, I can't force you to work out. Like, you have to actually physically just make yourself work out, you know? And so I think for me, it's just literally like teaching through being, you know, like being the example. And it might not be on the court. Like, I don't get out there and work out and I'm not super fit, but they see me doing 100% what I can as a mother. They see me doing 100% as a student myself. They'll see me doing 100% as an entrepreneur, as a woman, you know? And so they really just, at the end of the day, they're like, yo, she's giving us 100. We got to match it, you know, or even exceed it. So I'm glad that you took that away from watching us play.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, it was a very tough season. You know, we started with 14 players. We didn't have an athletic trainer on site. So we weren't even able to scrimmage during practices because we never had a trainer on site. And so it was just, again, a difficult situation, but we really kept, what kept us going was the vision that we had for the program that we were trying to build, you know, and it was heart and hustle. That's literally like what I preach and what I try to live by. And, you know, and I'm glad that a lot of these girls, and now they're very successful businesswomen, young women, wives, mothers, you know, so it goes beyond the 94 feet. So.
Yeah. You could, I mean, you could definitely see it. I mean, it was visually there no matter what. You could see off after the game, just the camaraderie, everybody's, you know, they gave it their all. I mean, that's all you can ask for. After Westcliff, so I mean, this decision to, because I know, again, following you through social media, seeing stuff, other business ventures are going on where you're there, but you decide to move states. Like, so you get down to Lady of the Lakes?
Yeah, Our Lady
of the Lakes. Our Lady of the Lakes, right? So that move there, was that a difficult one, or that something based on opportunity? You knew, okay, I got to jump on this and learn from that.
Yeah, it was, honestly, I was at the end of my, like, because this was like June when I got the job offer. So what ended up happening was I had this guy hit me up on Instagram. And again, network relationships. And I just like, oh, hey, slide in the DMs. But it was just, he was following me on social media, hit me up. It was like, I love what you're doing. Hey, we're doing this camp in San Antonio. You should come help. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm currently unemployed. Like, I don't have money to go to San Antonio, but I appreciate the opportunity. He was like, don't worry about it. Everything paid for. Just come help run this camp. So I'm like, all right, sign me up. Like, you know, and so I go run the camp. Again, anything that I'm supposed to be there as a guest, and I'm jumping in on drills. I'm jumping, like, if I see that a station didn't have a coach, it's like, oh, I got you. No worries. Like, you know, like, and no one had to ask me, like, hey, can you go help there? And like, I had that initiative to say, okay, I see a need. I see someone needs a rebounder. Okay, I got you. You know what I mean? Like, whether I'm in jeans or whatever, like, I'm gonna help. And so the guy that I went with was also a guest. And so he would just show up, you know, do his spiel and bounce. And he's like, yo, you want to go tour the city, whatever? And I was like, no, like, I'm here to work this camp. Like, I'm, you know what I mean? Like, y'all paid me to come out here to work, like, not to, you know, tour the city. And he was like, okay. So I ended up staying the whole camp. And so the camp director, who is the men's head coach at Our Lady Lake, which we call Olu, he's the men's head coach at Olu. He comes up to me. He's like, where are you from? You know, who are you? And I was like, you know, Coach Patty, like, nice to meet you from San Diego. We just get to talking. And he's like, wait, you're supposed to be like our guest speaker. And he was like, what are you doing? Like, running the drills. And I was like, oh, well, there's nobody on this station. He was like, oh man. He was like, I appreciate you, whatever. So then we end up talking the rest of the camp, and he asked me like where I was coaching. I told him I was unemployed at the time. So he says, hey, our women's coach, the head coach at the time, just got a D1 job. So he's leaving, and his assistant is taking over the head coaching position. She's going to need an assistant. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, come meet the AD. So he walks me during the camp, walks me over to the AD's office. And he's like, hey, this is Patty Medina. She's unemployed. She can be a great assistant for, you know, coach. She's going to send you her resume and stuff. Sends me the resume. A week later, they're flying me back out to San Antonio for an interview. The week after that, I'm planning my relocation, end up putting stuff in my car and drive off. And it was an easy situation for me because it was my last resort. It was like, if I don't take this position, I don't have anything else available. And for me, it was like, okay, God, if this is the only opportunity I have right now, then it's because you need me to leave, you know? And I'm glad I did, because I've always wanted to be in the East Coast, but I didn't want to just go from West Coast to East Coast. And so I ended up in Texas. I was in Texas for a year. Yeah, I was in Texas for a year, and like, I really enjoyed being out of California. And so that's how I ended up at Olu. But, you know, in the gist of it, to answer your question, was it wasn't a difficult decision for me because I felt like it was purpose-led. You know, it was purposely led. It was like, I'm very big on discernment, prayer, you know, omens, like, whatever. Things don't happen just because. Like, I heard this thing the other day that said coincidences are God's way of staying incognito. You know, like coincidences are God's way for him to stay in the background, to not be in the forefront. Like, these coincidences don't just happen. Like, they're, it's God's work, but he wants to be incognito, you know? And so, yeah, I think that's what ended up happening, you know?
That's super dope. Like I said, so you get that little pit stop within that year, good season, learn a lot, develop relationships, and then the East Coast thing, like I said, now you're still in Texas, though, but now you're going far east. You're going to Baltimore. Again, was that a back against the wall thing, no options, or that was some, okay, now this is time to elevate, and like you say, you finally said shift that purpose of the behind the scenes admin type thing, like, okay, this is where my final, I guess my next road should be. How'd that go?
Yeah. So again, no coincidences, right? So we're in season, and I, you know, my son, he was just missing a lot of school, and I was like, you know what, it might be time for me to, like, shift over to a different position, because I need to invest more time in my son. Like, I don't want him to have any resentment towards me later in life, saying, like, my mom worried more about her career than she did me, you know? And so last year, for the church that I go to, Transformation Church, Mike Todd, TC Nation, they do a fast. And so we did a fast January 6th through the 12th, right? So we're out in Louisiana. We were doing like this NOLA tour, game tour, whatever, and at the hotel room. And I had started my fast that morning. And I was like, you know, I'm going to be in prayer later. And so, I get a message on LinkedIn, and I had changed my LinkedIn to like open to work, whatever, right? Literally start my fast on the 6th. I get a message on LinkedIn from a athletic administrator at Bowie State. And he hits me up and he's like, hey, I see you're open to work. I'd like to run something by you. And I'm like, all right, like, you can call me at this time, whatever. Calls me, end up talking to him for like an hour and a half. And he, you know, he tells me that he has been following my profile on LinkedIn, that he loves what I do, that there's a position in the teaching department and sports management department at Bowie State if I would be interested in doing it. Mind you, it's the first day of my fast, right? So then I'm like, let me pray on it, I'll get back to you. And so I pray on it. Get back to him the next day. I said, yeah, I'm interested, you know, how, like, what's the process? And he was like, well, you'll have to come out here and interview. It was last year during MLK weekend. So end up buying a flight, you know, and I had to pay that one out of pocket, bought a flight, flew out here, 23 degree weather, you know, just like, do we want to live here? And so we ended up going and interviewing. This was like mid January, go interview, kill it at the interview. They offered me the job. I signed like a contingent contract because they were still going to process like budgeting and pay and whatnot. And they're like, yeah, the job's practically yours. Like, when can you start? And I was like, well, shoot, like, give me like 2 weeks, you know, and I'll be out here. So let's say March 1st or whatever. And they're like, all right, bet, you know, let's do it. I go back to, from the interview, go back to Olu. I talk to the athletic director. I tell him what's going on. And I tell him, I'm like, hey, should I give my 2 weeks or, you know, because it's mid-January. And I was like, should I give my 2 weeks or what? And he was like, you know what? You're going to need time to relocate. He was like, it's going to suck if you work the last 2 weeks. We'll pay you out the rest of this month. He was like, put in your 2 weeks, but you're done. You can start working on relocating. So he pays me out, pays me my vacation time. Like, it was like if I had quit that day, but I didn't. Right. Like, I submitted my 2 weeks.
You're still in the books.
That was my last day. And they still, because, you know, if you quit, they don't pay you vacation time. Right. They don't do any of that. So
that was good luck.
Yeah, he paid me out to the end of the month, which was like 2 weeks of pay, not having to work there, and vacation time and all that. So I ended up relocating. Come out here, and so I go to Bowie, and we're doing the paperwork, and they're like, yeah, we'll let you know next week, what's the next step. Next week, COVID hits. Mm. So then they're like, hey, it's March 6th. By then it's March 6th. I'm already in D.C. I'm already in Maryland. My stuff is in my little car. Like, what do I do? So I end up getting a storage room, put my stuff in storage, and I had an Airbnb for a couple of days. And they were like, yeah, COVID hit. We're in a hiring freeze. We can't bring you on. So I'm like, all right, well, you know what? Like, if I'm going to be stuck anywhere, I'll be stuck in San Diego. Got on a flight. All my stuff was in storage, parked my car on like a friend's street, and then flew back to Cali and dove into my nonprofit in Cali. But then while I was doing that, I was applying for other jobs. So I'm applying for other jobs. And so that's when this one came up, but it was in Baltimore. And so I called Bowie and I said, hey, you know, my loyalty is to you guys because you guys offered me the job. But like, if you can't give me a date, like a start date, like, what do you want me to do? And so she was like, no, like, I appreciate you, you know, take the job in Baltimore. We'll try to bring you on as a teacher, even afterwards, so that you're in our system. And then once, you know, COVID settles and we can hire full-time staff, like, we will get back to you.
Of course.
So sure enough, took the job here as an assistant AD. I started teaching at Bowie sports management in the fall, and yeah, we're here at this point. And I was able to really grow my nonprofit while being in Cali, you know, for the all of last summer. So yeah, a whirlwind of
events. No coincidences though. No coincidences. Nope. And it worked out for you to fly home and then be able to get that opportunity and still build the other business. And speaking of nonprofit, Hoover Mentality Foundation. I mean, let's talk about it. I mean, it's grown so much, but it's been, again, given time, no coincidences, stuff that were going on in the world today, how it just kind of blossomed and took over and kind of, let's talk about Hoover Mentality.
Yeah, so Hoover Mentality, we actually started it about 2 years ago, but we started it just as, like, running basketball camps in San Diego and in Mexico. So we would run free basketball camps, and then within the basketball camps, we would have, like, mindfulness, yoga, Bible study. It wasn't really like mental health focused, but we would do a lot more mental health stuff than most basketball camps. Now you see it, a lot of camps do yoga now, they'll do mindfulness, they'll do Bible study. But at the time, we were one of the only that were doing Bible study during basketball camps or yoga or like literally laying on the floor meditating, you know? And so... So it started as a camp and then went to Mexico. We had about 200 athletes in Mexico. We had a bunch of donations for the balls and we ended up running a camp. I had an all female staff when we did the camps in Mexico, because that's another thing that I'm trying to help change the narrative of how women are seen in Mexico as not being apt for leadership positions. And so I would bring it in all women staff. And we ran these camps. And so then, but then once season started, like wherever I was coaching, once season started, Hoover Mentality would take, you know, the backdrop, and we wouldn't do anything from August until March, you know. And so at Olu, like, again, I didn't do anything from August till February. And then we come back. So I went back to San Diego when COVID hit, and I had bought, like, my staff Hoover Mentality hoodie. So I bought like 5 hoodies, got them made. And everywhere we went, people were like, yo, like, what's Hoover Mentality? Like, what's Hoover Mentality? What's Hoover Mentality? And so they would ask us. And so, like, we're texting each other, like, yo, are y'all having like really thorough conversations with random people? And we're like, yeah, like, you know, I was on the subway in New York. Somebody came up to me and then they shared their mental health experience and their issues and, you know, their trauma. And I'm like, wow, like, we're having very candid conversations with complete strangers, and all because they ask, hey, what's Hoover Mentality? Or what's that hoodie for? You know, and so then the person, like, obviously it was all my staff. We all, like, know our mission. And so we're like, yeah, it's an initiative that helps with, you know, mental health awareness among student athletes. And they're like, oh, yeah, I deal with mental health too. And then so then we start talking. And so my my friends were like, yo, we got to release hoodies. Like, we got to sell hoodies. Like, we got to sell t-shirts. I'm like, nah, like, I don't want to be in apparel. Like, I want to focus on, like, the service that we provide. Right. I don't want to be, like, in apparel or the product, you know. And they're like, no, we got to do it. And so then I finally gave in. I was like, you know what? All right, let's do it, right? So I posted, like, I think my first hoodie, I made it in my sister's garage. Mm-hmm. So it was a white hoodie. She had, like, the screen printing stuff. So I made it in my sister's garage, screen printed it, and that's the one I did, like, a mini photo shoot with. And mm-hmm. so once I did that one, people were like, oh, hey, I want one. So I was like, yeah, we're going to release them this day, whatever. So ended up posting them. We did a three-day sale. The first three-day sale, we sold $8,000. We were like, okay, let's do another one. So we did another one, like, 2 weeks later. Within 1 month, we had 2 3-day sales, $12,000 in the first month. $12,000 in the first month. And, you know, full transparency, because we talk about where this money goes. And so $12,000 after profits. I mean, after expenses. So $12,000 profit. And so we're like, what do we do? Like, what do we do with this? Like, how can we give back? And then, like, in April, I get a phone call from my college buddies from Dominican. And they're like, yo, we're going to do this thing, like, Speak Up and Dribble, like a spinoff on LeBron James.
Right.
And they're like, we want you to be a part of it. I was like, I'm bringing T-shirts. Like, what do I need to do? So with the $12,000 that we made, we were able to get all the T-shirts for all the protests. We were able to get snacks. We were able to pay, like, our hotel stays, our flights, you know, for my staff that would go mm-hmm. to these different cities. And we were able to, like, be impactful. And so we had that one. I can't even take credit for it because it's 7 of us. And 6 were from San Francisco. So we had someone that worked for the BIPOC community, someone that worked with the AAU team. So we had AAU coaches. I mean, you know, because we were even talking about maybe running one in Sacramento. Yep. And so, next thing you know, we're on SportsCenter, ESPN. And they're calling, like, yo, like, can we do one in New York? You know, and I'm just like, well, shoot, we have the $12,000. Like, mm-hmm. let's buy more T-shirts, give them out for free. Let's give out snacks. And we had people were like, how can we help? I'm like, yo, just donate for snacks, you know. Mm-hmm. And so literally had so much support. We ended up doing two in New York. So in New York, we were part of two. We didn't actually organize those, but we were part of them. So I would bring T-shirts to them. So we had one in Harlem and one in the Bronx. And so we had those. And then we get a phone call like, hey, can we do one in Oregon? So then we organized with this organization called Black Unity. And so they helped us organize the one in Eugene, Oregon. And then we came in with the T-shirts. We came in with the flyers and everything. We flew out there, took pictures, videos, all that. And then we did one in LA, and then we did one in San Diego. And then from there, everybody kind of, again, their season started back up. People went back to work. Mm-hmm. It kind of just started slowing down. And so right now, we're actually in the process of organizing Speak Up and Dribble in Baltimore, and then one in PG County. So in Maryland, PG County, yeah. which is, you know, Kevin Durant, Mike Beasley, mm-hmm. like all from that area. And we want to do it Speak Up and Dribble, obviously against the police brutality, but we also want to focus on the homicide rates here in Baltimore mm-hmm. and in PG County, gang violence, gun violence, you know, about killing our own, about black on black crime, you know, so we want to focus on that. So we're going to be doing like another launch in a couple weeks. And all the proceeds from that launch are going to go to organizing the two here in Baltimore. And so we were able to connect with the mayor. We were able to connect with different nonprofits out here. Mm-hmm. So a lot of behind the scenes going on right now because we want to be impactful in the East Coast as much as we were on the West.
Definitely. I got a couple connects out there who were actually definitely from Baltimore in the city. So I'm going to shoot their information your way. And they're impactful in the city. They want to make sure they change their city, too. They know how important it is. So some of my good friends and associates. So that's super dope. So being able to do this right and move cities and grow that. For you personally, though, how impactful, again, we talk about, like, it's not the money, right? How rewarding is it just self inside? Like, I mean, how do you feel after these things get accomplished and they're successful and they change lives? How do you feel after start one slogan, one shirt, one sweater turns into whatever, how many orders? How does it make you feel?
Well, Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it was humbling. You know, it was like, wow, my logo or our logo is literally causing or allowing people to have honest conversations with one another, with strangers. Not only that, like, they're out here promoting, like, our best advertisement is literally the people that wear the hoodies. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's people that don't play basketball that are like, I don't play basketball, but I deal with mental health. Like, can I get one? And I was like, for sure. So we got team moms, we got, you know, former ball players, we have soccer players, we have people that played football, that, you know, people that don't know anything about basketball but deal with depression, deal with anxiety. And so for me, the most rewarding feedback I get is, I love what you guys are doing, I love your mission, I support it 100%, you know. And I think for me, that was the biggest thing. And that's why I was so hesitant about doing, like, apparel, mm-hmm. because I didn't want it to become like, oh, just, we're just selling gear, you know, right. like I love God is Dope, the brand God right. is Dope, but it's like, they're not really in the community like that. Like, they, to them, their mission is to spread God's word. And right. then, so they sell hundreds and hundreds of God is Dope shirts, mm-hmm. which is their mission. Right. And it's their, that's their mission, their purpose. For me, I didn't want it to just be like, oh, hey, we're just distributing, you know, clothes like that. Like, I wanted it to be like, hey, we're running camps.
You want
to
be more having... than a brand, more than a brand.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah. And I had people reach out like, yo, you want to do an all-star game, Hooper Mentality versus this other brand. And I was like, no,
right.
like that's not what I'm leaning towards. Like, we want to, like, if anything, we want to partner with organizations that are doing things. So, like, here, I've already partnered with two organizations. One of them is called Catch Them Young. Mm-hmm. And so they literally do everything Hooper Mentality does, but without the sports aspect. So they do life skills training. They do mental health skills training. They do entrepreneurship skills, you know, different things like that. So we're partnering with them. And they're based out of PG County. And then we're partnering with this other organization called Words, Beats, and Life. And it's, again, similar to Hooper Mentality, but they teach skills through the hip-hop culture. And so they do DJing, MC, graffiti art, and breakdancing. And so they teach those skills, and then they help teach how to transfer them into, like, employable, you know, people. And so just making connections, you know. But for me, like you said, I'm in awe. Like, all the time, I'm like, wow, people really love our mission. Like, they love the logo. They love that we've have, you know, I have my friend that coaches for the San Antonio Spurs. Mm-hmm. He rocks our stuff regularly. My friend Scoonie Penn coaches for Memphis Scoonie Grizzlies. Penn
went to Ohio State. Yeah,
he's rocking our stuff on Instagram. Yeah, yeah. You know, we had Kerry Hilson was rocking our shirt on Instagram. You know, Russell Westbrook's wife reached out and wanted a few shirts, you know, and it's just like things like that. Like, it was like, wow, like, we created this, you know. And the main goal was to get people talking about mental health.
Right.
And I think we've done that. I think we're going to continue to do that. And we want it to be a regular conversation. Like, we don't want it to be awkward, you know, like, we don't want it to be awkward to where it's like, yo, I have suicidal tendencies, you know, and like, it, people right. should be okay in admitting to those things so that we can help, you know. And I think right now there's still a lot of stigma, especially in the mm-hmm. black and brown communities. You know, parents will be like, bro, you're fine. Shake it right. off. Like, you're not depressed. You're just having a bad day, you know. And it's like, that's what was the norm, you know. And so now we actually have to have conversations because we're raising hurt men and women. You know, and like they say, hurt people. And so
yes,
we want to make sure that here, that's why I feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be, because the mayor here in Baltimore just passed a legislation called Heal the City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the main thing is like, how do we heal our youth? How do we heal our current, like, there's this one organization that I work with here. It's called We Our Us. And so they literally meet twice a week and they walk the streets of Baltimore and they talk to, and it's just men. Mm-hmm. It's mainly men and a few women, but it's mainly men. You got Christians, you got Catholics, you got Muslim brothers. Mm-hmm. Like, you have, you know, all these black men in their suits and ties, whatever, walking the cities of Baltimore, and they'll reach out to the youngins out on the street. And so just recently they saw this guy walking, like, you know, and a well-dressed guy. It wasn't like he was a homeless or anything. It was like a young man mm-hmm. walking with like a half of a cut bottle. And they're like, yo, young man, like, let's holler at you. Like, where are you going? What are you doing? He's like, I'm about to go kill. Like, he was literally like, I'm about to go. He was about to go take someone's life. Mm-hmm. And this group that was just walking down the streets of Baltimore, you know, pulled him in. Mm-hmm. And they were like, let's pray for you. And they prayed over him. He threw away, you know, the bottle. He went home and nobody died, you know. And it, right. And that's the thing right now. It's like in Baltimore, like, how many days can we go without someone dying? And sadly, but which is a great thing, it's only been two. Mm-hmm. We've only been able to go 2 days, like, right. And then there'll be something, or we'll go 1 day and there'll be something, you know? And so, I feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be, you know? And I feel like the purpose of Hooper Mentality, is going to be very well fit here in Baltimore.
Yeah. So the goal is to change some numbers. That's dope. That's the purpose. So where can they find your IGs for both of your platforms, Speak Up and Dribble and Hooper Mentality?
Yeah. So for Speak Up and Dribble, if you just go Speak Up Dribble, that's our Instagram. But if you go to the.hooper.mentality, you'll see on there. Or you can even just go to mine, which is coach.patty. And I have a link tree, and so it has all the links to that in the bio. So you click on the bio, and it has the links to everything from the Speak Up and Dribble to, you know, just a lot of things on there. So
dope, super dope. So again, being Women's History Month, before we get out of here, I don't know, anything is your time. Anything you want to encourage the women of the world, the young ladies, the young ballers of the world? It's your platform. Your turn.
Yeah, and it's also International Women's Day next month.
March. Put it all together.
Yeah. So being I came here as an illegal immigrant. I came here as, I didn't get my U.S. citizenship until I was 17. So I was literally an illegal immigrant until I was 17. So again, I think for women, what I would tell women is, like, don't dim your light for anyone, whether male or female. Like, don't dim your light. You know, we have this saying in Mexico, and like, we use it as a hashtag. Anytime I post something in Mexico, we put mujeres chingonas, which means like badass women, you know? And so we try to really, especially in cultures where it's, you're not supposed to be a leader. Like, you're supposed to be at home cooking and keeping the house clean. And so it's like, we're having to break these generational ideals of what a woman is supposed to do. And so, my main thing is just whatever you do, you know, your work ethic is going to speak for itself. If you half-ass the things that you do, you can't expect, you know, full results. That's in working out. That's, you know, even eating, like what you eat. I know that what I eat is not going to give me, you know, a sexy figure or whatever. Like, but I know that, you know, and if I knew that if I gave it 100%, like, then I would get the results. And so I think my main things are, your work ethic speaks for itself. Control the controllables, especially right now during COVID. There's a lot of things that we have no control over. So it's like, just control the controllables. And then just, you know, just don't settle. Like, don't settle, you know. And I think for me, that's been one of my biggest things, is like, I never settle. Even when I'm, if I feel like I'm in a position where I'm not being challenged, I'm looking for the next position that's going to challenge me. And that's probably why I got into my PhD, because I was feeling like, okay, I need to do something, especially with so much time with COVID. I was like, I need to do something that's going to challenge me. And I mean, my first class, I got a C, and I was just like, oh my God, you know, cause I hadn't been back in school since 2013. But if I'm telling my players, yo, work on your time management, do, you know, this, do that,
right,
then I'm like, damn, I got to walk my talk and do my time management. So, like I told you, like, I got off Instagram because I'm like, and so this last class, I was able to get an A. And again, it's just walking my talk, you know, walking my talk. And that's pretty much it. You know, women are very powerful. You know, the future is female. I believe it. And, you know, now with Kamala Harris, it's becoming more and more obvious that we are very apt to do anything and everything that, you know, that we can and set our minds to. So
Definitely dope. I appreciate you again taking time out of your schedule. Thank you. Thank you. We'll be in contact about this Baltimore thing, man, because it's definitely something dope. I'm going to have to get on the flight, man, because I think it'd be dope, man. And just that environment, man, again, it's for the people and for the communities, and it's what you've always been about. So, which is dope, right? You find your purpose and your why, man. So, I appreciate your time. You know, take care, and we'll be in contact. All right.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you again.
As soon as I have the dates for those speak up and dribble, let me know. Maybe you can come out here.
Yep. It's on and popping. Like I said, my connections are your connections. And so, like I said, those guys are from the city. So I hope they want to do the same thing. So that's what it's about, right? So that's what they want to do. So I'll make sure I'm going to be that bridge if I can. So we'll get it rocking.
Appreciate you. Thank you so much. And good job on the podcast. And good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks, you too. All right. Be safe.
All right.
All right.
Too. Bye.